Hello and welcome back to the Breathing Deeply Yoga Therapy and Meditation Podcast with Brant Pasalakwa, founder of the Breathing Deeply Yoga Therapy and Meditation School. In this podcast, we answer our students' questions and share information about yoga therapy and meditation with the intention of creating a new paradigm in wellness. Thank you so much for being here. Now let's dive into the show.
It's always so nice to see all your faces. I'm glad we could come here to discuss our favorite subject, knowing ourselves. Today we're going to talk about duality and non-duality. So those are words you might have heard before in different contexts. In the kind of stream of meditation we're studying, there needs to be a usefulness to all concepts and ideas. And these concepts can help us direct our thoughts and our practice. And we definitely want it to be practical. But in order to do that, we have to understand them philosophically. So philosophically, duality and non-duality are in opposition. But practically, they can work together and help us guide our practice. The big question always is, or usually is, what is the goal of meditation? And the dualistic model says that basically matter, you know, the world we see and feel, and spirit, or sometimes you'll see the seen and the unseen, are separate. To know ourselves fully and be one with God or nature, we must separate ourselves from the materialistic seen world. From that point of view, then we can experience our true nature, which is spiritual. And this comes through a series of transformations that remove impurities in us that hinder our perception of the way things really are. So if you look at the Yoga Sutras, which is a dualistic text, right in the beginning, the second sutra says, yoga is experienced in that mind that has ceased to identify itself with its vacillating waves of perception, its thoughts. So we experience yoga when we no longer identify with our thoughts. We separate ourselves from them. And then in the second chapter, there's a sutra that says, by sustained practice, impurities dwindle away. So again, getting rid of something, and wisdom's radiant light shines forth. And then in the fourth chapter, there's a sutra that ends, then all the obscuring veils and impurities are removed. The Yoga Sutras is based on this idea that we have to separate ourselves from things that challenge our perception, and I think it's a highly relatable one. It's also the basis of many religions that people have grown up with. God and ourselves are separate ideas, and we need to shed our worldly desires and merge with God if we're going to understand our spiritual nature. And many people come to meditation and meditate with this concept in mind. They want to change what's happening in their minds. So they're suffering on some level, and they want to have a different experience by getting rid of patterns, beliefs, ideas, thoughts, etc. And I'm sure we can all relate to that. Most of us probably came to yoga meditation this way. I would propose that that is a really useful way to enter into the process of spiritual development. We need to perceive the space between our thoughts and our actions. We need to find that witness consciousness, as it's referred to often, which is really basically seeing our thought processes from a distance without reacting to them. We need to understand that the suffering we're experiencing is separate from our spiritual nature, and we meditate so that we can find the separation. And by doing this, we can have experiences that are spiritual in nature and help us remember who we really are and remember things like that life is finite and that many of our concerns are definitely not warranted. And then on the other hand, we have a different model, which is the non-dual model. And the book we talked about last week, the Spandakarika, which is a tantric point of view, offers a kind of different point of view on the situation. And that book basically offers that everything is spiritual. The seen world and God or nature are the same, and everything is consciousness. And our job is to understand this and live our lives with this knowledge. So how do we do this? We do this by meditating in a way that supports this viewpoint. Our suffering is based on the fact that we think that some things are spiritual and some are not. The reality is, according to this viewpoint, our desires and perceptions come and go. They expand and contract. And in itself, that's not really a problem. It's not problematic. If we keep practicing, this philosophy goes, we'll understand this fully. And every experience we have, whether it feels to us internal or external, will support our mind in understanding that everything, as Swami Muktananda said, is part of the play of consciousness. So we're living in this knowledge that all things are just the play of consciousness or God or nature. So the third stanza in the Spandakarika says, even within duality, the tantrika goes straight to the non-dual source, because pure subjectivity always resides immersed within his own nature. Pure subjectivity always resides immersed within his own nature. So it seems dual, but it's not, because there's no way to be outside who you really are. It's only to read that. And in the 22nd stanza, it says, the profound and stable sacred tremor can be reached in extreme states, anger, intense joy, mental wandering, or the drive towards survival. So in this stanza, it's pointing out that you can find this sort of spiritual or consciousness part of yourself, because everything is consciousness, in all sorts of states, including even mental wandering, which is kind of interesting, right? Not paying attention, mind not doing what you want it to do, or the drive towards survival, looking for food, etc. So this is a different viewpoint than the Yoga Sutras have. And this viewpoint, I believe, is also super helpful. It does a few things. It allows us to accept things the way they are. There's no need to judge ourselves, because all thoughts are part of a greater whole. Every desire and every state is a possible road to self-knowledge and liberation. Things come and go, and that's just the way it is. So in summary, it kind of takes the pressure off the dualistic separation process, which is great. We don't have to feel the need that we have to really be different in any way than we actually are. It's also a challenge, because as linear, action-oriented humans, it's very hard to maintain this perspective. So our practice must support our ability to have felt experiences of oneness, so that we may take those felt experiences into the world and kind of walk around the world with this non-dualistic perception. After some time working with, considering, and studying these two orientations, I've come to realize they're not in opposition at all. At certain moments and points in our development, it can be really important to view our world as our worlds as separate. The knowledge that our perception of things expands and contracts naturally is also key to continuing our practice. So if we understand these concepts and read the text with these points in mind, we can often find an orientation that allows us to relax into our practice and allow it to do the work in us, if we're in the right orientation at the right moment. We have our third main text, the Tao, and the Tao is dualistic, technically, because it sees the opposing forces of nature as necessary, good and bad, strong and weak, brave and fearful. It shows us that our mind processes our inner and outer experiences in this dualistic way. And then the Tao offers that the practice is acceptance and the idea of non-doing. It also helps us understand that the interplay between dualistic and non-dualistic thinking, by showing us the practice of seeing the duality and seeing the opposites, and then accepting that they only exist really as one thing. So right in the beginning of the Tao Te Ching, the second stanza is this. So with this dualistic and non-dualistic thing in mind, let's hear these words and see what our mind can do with them. When people see some things as beautiful and other things become ugly, when people see some things as good, other things become bad, being and non-being create each other. Difficult and easy support each other. Long and short define each other. High and low depend on each other. Before and after follow each other. Therefore, the master acts without doing anything and teaches without saying anything. Things arise and she lets them come. Things disappear and she lets them go. She has, but she doesn't possess. Acts, but doesn't expect. When her work is done, she forgets it. That's why it lasts forever. So we could contemplate this passage right at the beginning of the book forever and do pretty well in our practice. And our job is to understand these concepts and understand when it might be useful to contemplate one, like the dualistic point of view, versus another. And in this way, we orient ourselves and we give our meditation practice perspective. So with all that said, how does this all translate into meditation? So there's a couple of examples. Sometimes we watch our breath and thoughts from a distance, or we chant a mantra to crowd out other non-useful thoughts. We acknowledge the dualistic nature of our minds in this way. And at other times, we open our practice to all things being still and finding a safe state where all sensations, thoughts, and insights are one thing, and there's no need to modify anything. At different times, even within a formal meditation session, we may have different orientations, techniques, or a lack of techniques, orientations. Teachers are invaluable because they can help us navigate these orientations so that our practice can be fruitful on and off the mat. So these are big concepts. In our philosophy section, we're going to look at a few of them, and this is a big one. In most traditions, you would be looking at one or the other. But in this training, we're going to be using both because both have so much usefulness. And with all of these types of concepts, they're large and take a while to digest. So, of course, the conversation continues. So I thank you for your attention. My hope is that these concepts will help us all understand ourselves more fully.
Thank you so much for making it to the end of this episode. Please subscribe, rate, and review our show and help us share yoga therapy with more people around the world. If you think this episode will help someone you know, feel free to share it with them. If you love yoga therapy and meditation, you can follow us over on Instagram at Breathing Deeply Yoga, where we share anything and everything to help you advance your understanding of yoga therapy and meditation. For more information about our yoga therapy and meditation trainings and programs, visit breathingdeeply.com. See you in the next episode.